spiritual warfare and holy submission. Rolling brimstone, one review called it. And he had done so at a moment when he could have been expected to set himself against Christianity, not affiliate himself with it. Strident new forms of Christian faith were emerging in American public life and in the mass media. As Gotta Serve Somebody played on FM, fundamentalist preachers on AM and cable TV were blaming the counterculture for all that was wrong with America, and Ronald Reagan was preparing to run for president on a pledge to undo what the 60s had wrought. To become a born-again Christian in 1979 was to cross over to the dark side. A voice rose up in Dylan's support, Bob Marley, whose songs, rooted in Rastafarianism, struck biblical notes of Exodus, prophecy, and redemption. "You like his song Serve Somebody quite a bit," Marley said. "I glad him do it too, you know, because there comes a time when the artist just cannot follow the crowd. If you are an artist like Bob Dylan, you got to make the crowd follow you. I can tell you that it doesn't mean anything to him that people might not like what he is doing. Him still do it." On October 20, Dylan was a musical guest on Saturday Night Live. He came on around midnight, frizzy-haired, unshaven, dressed in white and faded denim. He did Gotta Serve Somebody, and it sounded the way it did on the radio, the organ swelling behind the vocals. He strummed a black Stratocaster, but he didn't look like a rock star or like the silhouette on the poster at the head shop in the mall. He seemed pensive, preoccupied. He wasn't serving anybody. He then played 14 nights at the Fox Warfield Theater in San Francisco, beginning a long tour. The show was a gospel-style revival. He did only Slow Train Coming and other new material. Between songs, he preached or scolded the crowd. They booed, they hooted, they heckled. They turned their backs and walked out. What was Dylan trying to do? Reinvent himself through a change of persona, express a sincere belief in Jesus, confound his cult-like following, tap into a deep current of American roots music, or all of the above. He played 79 shows, made a new album, took a break, and went back on tour in November 1980. Reagan had been elected president, backed by evangelicals and fundamentalists. Dylan's new album, Saved, had been savaged by reviewers. As the tour progressed, the audience changed. It was now split between Dylan freaks and Jesus freaks. There was a guy with a cross walking around the theater, the guitarist Fred Tackett said of one show. I don't know whether he was for us or against us. What was Dylan trying to do? It was impossible to say. The music he was making was soulful, the lyrics were biblical, and the motives behind it were cryptic. Sinead O'Connor encountered Dylan through Slow Train Coming. Growing up in a broken family in Dublin, she grounded herself through the records her mother and an older brother brought home. Slow Train Coming was released the summer she was 12, and she was transfixed by Dylan, the young rake on the Bringing It All Back Home sleeve, the vulnerable elder singing, I Believe in You. She would become a singer, performing her own songs in Dublin and then in London. At age 20, her head shaved, she was a rising star. By 23, when she sang two songs from I Do Not Want What I Haven't Got on Saturday Night Live, she was a global celebrity. She was outspoken, and with fame, she became controversial. Nominated for a Grammy, she had the logo of Public Enemy razored into the stubble on one side of her head to protest the awards broadcast's lack of attention to rap music. She canceled an appearance on SNL in May 1992 after learning that the host would be Andrew Dice Clay, a comedian whose stand-up routine featured jokes about men beating up women. After she refused to let the national anthem be played prior to a show in New Jersey, Sinead haters piled her records in Times Square